teach the teachers of teachers, to work on the psychological understanding, to work with the corporate and foundation sector to bring money into observing why it is that we are destroying creativity in our children in our educational system. This, to me, is what the answer is about, is to bring the, every community must solve it themselves. It is not going to come from on high. It must be done at the grassroots level, right here at home, in the schools, the relation of the teacher to the students. That's what has to be transformed, and that is what I want to do.
Let me tell you, Ted Albrecht, this is the kind of articulateness that makes Lauren Hollander not only a sought-after concert pianist, but a speaker as well. Your career on the speaking platform is something maybe we could pursue when we come back from this break, and I'm going to leave one more question hanging as well about the gifted artist. Can you imagine what it would have been like for somebody like Brahms, before he's even out of his teens, to have one of the leading lights in the musical world proclaim him the new Beethoven? How in the world, psychologically, would you withstand and grow with that kind of a pronouncement laid upon your shoulders so young? And maybe we can talk a little bit about that, because those were the words of Schumann towards Beethoven. Let's take a break right now. We'll be back with more with pianist Lauren Hollander, appearing this weekend with the Kansas City Symphony Orchestra. Okay, clear. You were starting to get onto some of this stuff last year, and I guess this just you're just going great guns with it. It's great.
Thank you. I'd also like to acknowledge that your perception of this is, I think, unprecedented in someone who does what you do, and to deal with these type of questions with the awareness you have, I think, is a very wonderful gift. Tremendous value to the community. I don't think many people who, I don't know of anyone who can deal with these questions as clearly as you can.
Thank you very much.
Say that on the air.
I guess I can go now.
And your warm
fuzzy. Oh, I brought something.
Now that he does.
When you have a chance, I'd like you to autograph that.
Wow.
I have a rogue's gallery, I guess you could call it.
Interesting. We had a
just bold as you please. It's the signature I want, not the picture.
In Monroe, Michigan, we had a friend who was a senior clergyman. He met him and his wife when they were in their late 50s, and they've been good friends now for half a dozen years. And he had no one in town to turn to when he had problems.
Thank you.
Because he was vulnerable, or he was on call, on the line. He was the mentor 24 hours a day, and he didn't know quite where.
Remember Heart is a Lonely Hunter, where you have the deaf mute who is always the wailing wall, and finally he blows his brains out. Klaus George Roy?
Yeah, Cleveland Orchestra's program manager.
Right.
Also composer.
Now, did you want to say something in that regard to him? Or?
We could, or we could just go on.
What, is he coming?
No, he's not coming. No, it's just his piece. And it's just a little fluff piece.
We'll open up then, and you can tell us about that concert, because I'm still catching up with some of these. Great. Someday, I'd sure love to sit down with a pianist. I was telling Ted, I wish he could show me how they do those trills in the first Brahms.
It's complicated.
I'd like to see how that's done. I think the fingers would all just be like this.
We did it
last year with our orchestra in the river here, and it went just about that way. One of our faculty members coming back about his tendonitis.
Mm-hmm.
That was his return. He was a crazy man, but he worked.
Thank you very much. Back here at the American Restaurant, we're enjoying a fine repast, talking to pianist Lauren Hollander here with the Kansas City Symphony Orchestra this weekend, performing the Brahms Second Piano Concerto, and also on the program the music of Beethoven and Bach. Before we continue our discussion with Mr. Hollander, Ted Albrecht, you've been sitting very patiently by. An extraordinary concert coming up that we must discuss right now. I can't wait, because as always, you're providing us with something very unusual and unique in your program, and I'll let you spill the beans, if you would.
Well, we try to come up with something new in addition to the old tried and true programs. The concert opens up with something very light, very enjoyable, and very short. It's a set of variations, actually the composer calls it chorale variants, on an Appalachian folk ballad. The folk ballad is Jimmy Randall, and the composer is Klaus George Roy.
A name that KXTR listeners may or may not be familiar with already.
If the listener is listening to the Cleveland Orchestra broadcasts on Sunday night, they know Klaus Roy's dulcet tones from being the intermission host. He's also the program annotator for the Cleveland Orchestra. But in addition to his literary gifts, he's also a gifted composer and a teacher as well, I believe. He was a good friend of ours the 4 years we lived there, so this is just a little further collaboration with Klaus.
That's one thing to have a Kansas City premiere, but how about a United States premiere? What? Am I reading this correct?
Northland does it again.
Ted, you're amazing. Now,
Hans Pfitzner,
we go.
A German composer who was a contemporary of Richard Strauss, 5 years younger, basically.
Wrote some wonderful songs, but I don't know the symphony.
Wonderful leader, just absolutely beautiful material. And the symphony is a product of kind of an Indian summer that he enjoyed very much the way Richard Strauss enjoyed at the end of his life. Pfitzner got himself in trouble with the Nazis and refused to leave Nazi Germany because he wanted to stay in Munich near his wife's grave. He himself was also in declining health during the late 20s and 30s, and so he wasn't inclined to move out of the country. So what we have is the Frankfurt Opera. He lived most of his youth in Frankfurt, and Hans Meissner, the general manager of the Frankfurt Opera, started in 1934 to put on, little by little, all of Pfitzner's operas in the repertoire. And then in 1939, for his 70th birthday, have an entire Pfitzner year. Hitler, however, forbade any national celebrations of Pfitzner's birthday in 1939, and so Meissner still did something very courageous in putting on a Pfitzner Festival week. Berlin, luckily, did not say anything about it. Pfitzner was there supervising the productions and performances and what have you. And the next year, 1940, came up with this symphony in C major. And he didn't make any specific dedication for it. He simply sent it to Frankfurt for the first performance with the general dedication to my friends. And so there is something of a social statement there, but it's very subdued. And because the piece was premiered in Nazi Germany, was published, he even recorded it himself with a very little harmonic, hung over or under a cloud for many, many years. Karl Böhm did it, Ferdinand Leitner did it, Josef Kailger did it, Furtwängler did it. But for some reason or another, the symphony has never been done in the United States, and it is just a marvel of a work. The first movements are, two movements are very much like Brahms and Schumann. Very beautiful melodies, often in a modal vein. And the third concluding movement is very much in the same vein as the last movement of Mendelssohn's Italian Symphony, very much an Italian dance and symphonic proportions.
All of that with the Brahms Fourth Symphony. What a program. Tell us where it is and when.
Park College. On Sunday, the 11th of December, at 3 p.m., our concerts are held in the chapel at Park College, and our concerts are unique in this point in that they're free for all of these premieres that you get free for absolutely no money.
Well, let's use that Brahms Fourth Symphony as a segue, because we did leave that question hanging about, here's this extraordinary young talent who comes to visit the Schumanns, virtually unheralded, and suddenly has this acclamation laid on his shoulders by Schumann himself. What a That could have broken, I suppose, a lesser man in some ways. Maybe. I don't know. I'm curious if either of you would like to jump in on this a little bit. Because here's a gifted artist truly put to the test right out off the bat.
It's fascinating to observe the life of young Brahms and the relationship that grew with Clara Schumann, the time of the slow disintegration of Schumann's own mental capacities. And Brahms's connection with Clara is very interesting, even on a psychological level, because Brahms's mother was 17 years older than Brahms' father. Clara was 16 years older than Brahms. And Clara was probably the only woman that Brahms loved. And later on, he asked Clara to marry Clara's daughter, and Clara refused. And so knew something in Brahms' personality was not so that she would have wished her daughter to be married to him. But it was a very complicated, very interesting early life. And if one even examines the early sonatas that were very craggy, showing an incredible gift, but missing some warmth and mellowness and a sense of line. And then he meets Clara, and suddenly it all just happens. That the first piano concerto over 23rd year is just a masterpiece with no compromises, and something magnificent happened to him at that time. And it certainly had to do with the relationship with Marshall.
The importance of our fellow person in the life of the artist, I suppose, seems to be a bottom line here. It's such a cliche, I suppose, but when all's said and done, the warmth of the human heart for an artist of any age is absolutely indispensable.
It's to support and acknowledge what the person brings forward. Brahms had much problem with the concern about the critics and what they would think about him. He ended in terrible depressions and the failures of certain of his works, but he persevered. He just eventually knew that that was the name of the game, and worked very hard, lived with this incredible shadow of Beethoven, but knew, even with the new wave of music that was growing all around him, he followed his natural songful harmonic gift straight through.
As our time is running out, I want to remind everyone we've been talking to Ted Albrecht and pianist Lauren Hollander, an artist we can appreciate for his words as well as for his music. I'm sorry we didn't have more time for your work as a platform speaker and as an educator and researcher now. It's seemingly an unlimited horizon here. Again, this weekend, Friday and Saturday night, with the Kansas City Symphony Orchestra, the Brahms Second Piano Concerto, the Beethoven Eighth Symphony, and then the music of Bach was, Davina Hill?
Suite number 3 in D major.
And I hope to see everybody in the concert hall. The last few weeks have been marvelous, and people have been coming out of the concerts, humming and talking to each other and singing, and what better response could you ask for? And Ted Albrecht, your concert on the 11th? And it's free. Thanks to one and all for joining us here on Lunch with the Stars. We'll be talking to you again next week.
Standing ovation.
Thank you.
Sorry to run everybody.
I certainly understand. Thanks for taking
have
the time.
Have Brahms yet this afternoon?
All right, just going to go rehearsal.
Might sit in a little bit later.
Schwarzes, feindliches Geschick entriss mir meine Schönheit.